Welcome to The Liberated Life, the podcast for women who are done pretending that they have it all figured out and are ready to live with more freedom, clarity, and courage. I'm Lucy Maeve, your guide on a journey through the unspoken parts of healing, desire, and self-discovery. This is a place to be seen, heard, and held, where we embrace all the complexities and contradictions of being fully alive. No masks, no shortcuts, just the real work and real liberation. Hello, my gorgeous one. Welcome back. If you have ever wondered about working with psychedelics, why people use them, what they're used for, thinking about it from a therapeutic perspective, I have got such a juicy episode for you today. I decided, having used psychedelics a lot myself and been asked multiple questions about clients, about my own journey and about the possibility of using psychedelics for healing, I thought it was about time that I got an expert in to come and talk to us all about psychedelic therapy. So I have the incredible Alexandra Artsoglu, who is on our podcast today. She is a wonderful friend of mine. She also studied with Gabor Maté, so we did the same Gabor training. And she is psychedelic integration and transformational life coach who helps seekers feel truly alive and turn peak experiences like ceremonies, retreats, spiritual awakenings into grounded, sustainable, new normal. She also has a bachelor's degree in psychology and is generally a wonderful woman and has been a forever seeker since the day she was born. This episode is full of so much beautiful spiritual wisdom, so much actionable and important information about the use of psychedelics, where to start, what to look for, how to manage the experiences. It is such a juicy one. There was a slight tech disaster midway through where my internet died. So if there's a little bit of a funky bit in the middle, see if you can catch it. But I hope you enjoy this episode. It was a joy to record. And yeah, let me know how you feel about it in the comments or send me a DM. Sending you so much love. I'm so excited for this episode. I was looking at your little intake form for our episode today, and I was like, this is going to be so juicy. And yeah, I'm super, super excited because I know that we're so aligned on so many things, having done similar trainings. Yeah. And I'm going to go straight in. And I want to know, because you, to me, come across as someone who is deeply embodied in this work, has been in it for a long time, like all about spiritual work, all about self-actualization. Before all of that, like before the peak experiences, before the psychedelic work, who were you?
good. I'm thinking, should I go all the way to my childhood? But no, I have a good before and after story. But yes, your intake form questions are so good, which is why I love you. I'm like, oh, these are really good questions. This is not a 5-minute thing. This is like, grab a cup of tea, get comfy, go deep, you know, emotionally naked. Yeah. Spiritually. I'm like, this is going to be a really good conversation. So I've always been a seeker. Like ever since, I remember myself starting to write philosophy when I was 10. I used to question the point of life, the purpose. Like when my parents told me, do your homework, I'm like, why? What's the point? Go to school. What's the point? let's go to our grandparents for Christmas. I was like, what is the point of that? So I was always questioning the nature of reality. Who am I? What are we all doing? I was very interested in the crazy people on the street. Like, you know, homeless people, sometimes generally kind of crazy people that talk to themselves, go around, wander by themselves. And I was like, I honestly wanted, even as a kid, as a teenager, I wanted to go and ask them, what's up? What are you thinking? What's going on in the world? Like, what happened to you? Because I was like, what makes someone normal and someone abnormal? Like, what's the definition? Where's the line? I was always curious in things like that.
I'm obsessed with this. Because people have asked me the same thing. And I often give the answer of like, oh, I was stuck in banking and really miserable. I was the 7-year-old that turned around to my mum and was like, why do people just get jobs to make money for someone else and then distract themselves before they die?
Simply put, oh gosh, poor mom. Yep, exactly. Because I don't know, we were ready to become who we are.
But did you have, alongside that seeking, did you have a period of like dark night of the soul? Or just go straight into this work?
So basically, that's why it's really hard for me to ever find the beginning of my story, because I feel like it started right at the beginning, maybe even before that, as of recently that I started to learn a bit more about past life work and stuff like that. But I've always tried to focus on grounded stuff and not too woo-woo, even though I was radically obsessed with consciousness. But when I was a teenager, I had years that I was quite depressed, to be honest. And I was actually counting down for 3 years as if I was in jail. And my childhood was not that bad. It really was. It was pretty okay. Like my parents did the best they could. Lovely home. No big T trauma. Right. But for 3 years, from the age of 15, 16 till I was 18, I was counting down backwards so that day I would graduate high school to leave my home country and go out in the world and bring forth what is within me, as Joseph Campbell said. But the reason why someone is going out to seek who they are is because they don't know who they are and they're very confused. So I was oscillating between feeling confident and brave in a way, and like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go out and I'll meet cool people that will influence the way I think, and I will find the point of life, and then I will be truly happy, because clearly having a job and raising kids and doing it the normal way is not making people happy. So I don't know why they heavily advertise that. Like, clearly that's not what makes us happy. So let me do the opposite, like the completely unconventional. And that said, even after I had moments, so I studied psychology, which in Greek, my native language, means the science of the psyche. That's not exactly what I got. Maybe I had very different expectations out of my bachelor's. I took it too literally. But I discovered meditation when I was in the final year of my degree. So I was like 21 or 20. And I had a moment in meditation that changed everything. Looking at it now, there's no way that it could have happened differently. That's exactly like I needed that day then. And we can talk more about that experience later if you want. But basically, from meditation to then yoga, because yoga helped me meditate better, to then psychedelics, that I was always, as soon as I heard the word psychedelics, I was like, whoop, what's that? I'm interested. Because I was always feeling like there's more to life than this, than what we know, than what we experience. And I felt like this knowing of like, no, there must be more. Like, no one's talking about it around me, but I know it must be true. And when I heard the word psychedelics, I was like, oh, is this the thing? Is this what's going to teach me? What else is there? I know there's more. I know it gets deeper. I know there's more than what the eye can see. I didn't have the words back then, but that like intuition was leading me. That said, to go back to your actual question, besides the yoga, the meditation, the psychedelics, I've had I think it was about a year mainly, and then it became even more, where I was learning things about myself, but I was very much ungrounded. And we can see that often in many spiritual communities or many yoga communities, where people think they know things, but actually they are heavily just not really, like they may speak in therapy jargon and like they may use the right words. But I was basically, and one of my mentors back then in 2019 helped me see that I don't have a long-term vision for the future. I don't have a direction. Like, where am I going? Yes, I'm understanding some things, but then I started to be really anxious about, yes, I'm not following the conventional path. I was volunteering as a yoga teacher and living for free in exchange. So I was a very hippie life. And at the same time, I was really stressed about my survival. So there were many dark nights of the soul, and there still are, because every next level comes with darkness and light, lower lows and higher highs. But there were many times when I was like, there must be more than just self-awareness in my journey.
Yeah.
Because it was making me ungrounded and pretty miserable, to be honest.
I want to jump to the part when you were talking about this experience in meditation. Because to me, when I first started meditating and was like dipping my toe into this work, and I also came in through yoga to a certain degree, meditation was like the Headspace app. It was like, oh, like thoughts, like do this for stress reduction. And I think a lot of people, when they start coming into this work, see meditation as this thing to like help them be less stressed. And
yeah,
I want to understand a bit more about what you specifically are referring to when you're talking about meditation and that experience that you had in meditation.
Yeah, of course. That was one of the possibly three best days of my life, like top three. That nearly drowning in Mexico and ayahuasca. That's my top three. So if you want to have the whole list. So in the final year of my psychology degree, I was very stressed about coursework and the research project that I had to do, because research was not my strong suit. Like, I was there to understand behavior and why some people are abnormal. But that was not exactly what I signed up for in the country that I did it, which was England. so it was probably about 2 months of me crying nonstop and feeling like I'm wasting this whole degree and I'm not going to pass and I'm going to disappoint my parents and they're going to be ashamed of me and all of these like money invested in this degree and all the time I've spent and I will be kicked out. Like, so I was just really, really, really anxious. And my boyfriend at the time, I was thinking, should I defer the year? Should I take a gap year and then come back to complete the degree? And then he told me at the time, my boyfriend at the time, he told me, he's like, oh, now that's too late for that. You should have done that a month ago. Now you can't even do that. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's really no way out. And I tried three conventional ways. One was counseling in the university, and it was completely useless. Another one was some like anxiety relief medication that a psychiatrist prescribed so that I can sleep better. And some of my friends recommended I smoke weed. And like this, the pill and weed were equally useless, less useless than therapy at the time, but they calmed me down enough to not cry, but I could still feel the sadness and the anxiety.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, what's the point of that? Yeah, I'm not like wailing, but I can still feel like I know that the problem is here. I'm just not reacting like a crazy person. So like, this is not a solution to the problem. This is, what are we doing? And there were like a yoga and meditation society or something in my university. And I was attending some of the meditation circles and we were all like trying to meditate together. And there was this woman who was giving instructions and it was the casual, couldn't concentrate. My mind was taking. I was like, what are we even doing? Like a part of me was curious. Another part of me genuinely could not do it. Like all of us, that we're all thinking, oh, it's only me that I cannot stop thinking and understand how to do this. But because I was so desperate and nothing else that I knew of worked, like nothing else worked, on a Saturday morning, I said to myself, I'm going to sit here like the Buddha and follow all the instructions, which is basically like three instructions. Sit cross-legged, spine fairly straight. Close your eyes and focus on the breath. I'll follow just that. That's all I know about how to do this practice. And I'm going to sit here until I feel something. And I don't care if it takes until Sunday night. And it was like Saturday morning. I'm like, I don't have to go back to school until Monday. I'm just going to sit here and see if this really works or not. And that is a power of intention.
I'm like... Okay, we have got a seeker on our hands and a very devoted seeker. I will sit until something happens. Wow.
Yes. It's like, I have nothing else to do.
And what did happen?
So within about 50 minutes, 50, I felt for the first time, oh, actually, the first experience I started to have was that thoughts appear, but they're kind of like clouds. And if I don't interact and negotiate and get into the conversation, they just pass. They're like clouds and they just pass. And for me, focusing on the breath didn't go very well. So I was focusing on the darkness behind my eyes. It's the same. Then another day I tried with focusing on the sound and it did the same. But for me, if I had my eyes open and I was focusing on like a point in the wall, if I close my eyes, I'm still focusing on that point and I'm trying to only look at one thing. Like in yoga, we call that drishti, the focal point. You always focus on your finger on somewhere. It really comes down the mind. I didn't know that at the time, but yeah, interesting. It just came to me. I'm like, I'll just focus on blackness. It felt like an easier thing to do than the breath. Probably because I breathe like a rabbit. My breath is very inconsistent to this day. I need your breath work help here. So anyway, maybe that's why I couldn't focus on my dysregulated breathing. So focusing on blackness made more sense because that was like more consistent. So I did that. And then the first thing was like, yeah, thoughts are like clouds. That's interesting. I didn't know that there's a way to not be taken over by thoughts, to not. I was like, oh, there's a choice here. Like I can just go back to focusing on this and see what will happen if I just do this until tomorrow. And then at some point within 50 minutes, it felt like a clear knowing that I am not my body. I am an energy that's residing inside my body. And I had eating disorders at that time, maybe for 4 or 5 years. So like my relationship with my body was not good at all. And then to have that realization that I'm not my body, but my body is the vehicle that takes me places and it's the temple that I live in. So it makes sense to take care of it. But what I see in the mirror is not all that I am. I'm not saying I'm not my body at all. I'm just saying there's just so much more inside. And it felt as if my energy was shooting up to this universe of energies and everything was just energy. And when I opened my eyes and then I had downloads coming, like insights, which I previously only had on MDMA once. So it felt as if I'm back to a psychedelic space. I didn't have many psychedelics. I probably only had MDMA once, just once before that meditation experience. And it was probably months before. So it's not like I was in the afterglow or anything. And I was getting all these insights, things that even Jesus said, the Buddha had said. And I was like, oh my gosh, I fully get it. Like, exactly. I completely see what they mean. That's exactly what I experience. And interestingly, I had The Power of Now next to me by Eckhart Tolle. And I started reading the book and it felt as if I wrote it myself. I'm like, everything makes 100% sense. And this is exactly my experience. I cannot believe I'm having this experience right now. Like, and then I started messaging my mom after I opened my eyes. And I was like, I understand what Jesus said. And she thought I'm becoming religious. But I was like, no, 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 I'm not talking about the church. I'm talking about I fully understand what Jesus was talking about. And when I opened my eyes, I looked out of the window and I saw there was just nature. It was just countryside. And I just saw birds that were flying and the trees and the grass. And I realized that I am alive in a world that's constantly alive. And it's like a show that's live all the time. And everything is perfectly orchestrated. There's no regret for not having been born like 20 years ago, not being born in a different country. I'm like, no, no, no. Everything is perfect. It's so well orchestrated. And for the first time in my life, like what actually happened is that I entered the present moment and I realized that, oh, I am alive and there's no thoughts. I'm just being, like I'm being in the now and time just didn't mean anything. I was like, this is all there is, like now. And no thoughts about the future of the past, no anxiety, nothing. It was just presence and gratitude, immense gratitude. Like, oh my gosh, this is just so beautiful. This is like all there is. Like, what else is there? This is everything. And the day after that, of course, I sat again and I couldn't tell if it was like 2 hours or 10 minutes, like how long am I meditating for? And I think when I checked the time, it was something like an hour and a half. But I had no idea if it was like 10 minutes or not. Like, and then, of course, as any seeker would do, they're like, okay, I need to find out more about this. Where should I go? Probably India. Feels like the source.
I just am like that experience that you talk about of like opening your eyes and seeing everything being so perfect and so divinely orchestrated. I was sitting the other day and I find now that those experiences come to me just completely randomly and I don't know why they appear at times where I'm like, oh, I'm just in this space of stillness and everything feels perfect and great and whatever. And it's like, it drives me crazy that we still live in a world where everyone thinks that the thing that will get them there is buying more stuff. I'm like, No. It's an inner game. This is an inner game. Guys, we're playing the wrong game. We are playing the seriously wrong game, people. Stop. Stop that train. Get off that train over there.
Yeah.
And come this way.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's insane because, and that's what makes me really passionate in this. Not that I want to be completely anti-system. I used to be a little rebel, but it's like, so much of what we are being programmed to believe is the way is not. And I had a friend that I met in a spiritual gathering in India once. And she was probably, if I was like 20, 21 at the time, she was probably around in her 40s. And she became kind of like a really, almost like my mother away. Maybe she was in her early 50s, I don't remember, but she became almost like a second mom to me. I had a few of those female figures in my travels and that were giving me beautiful advice. And one of the things that she had said, it was like, we cannot trust what the government is selling. You cannot just go to the supermarket and buy food and expect that this is healthy food for you. You cannot, like, we really need to do our own research everywhere. And like knowing what I know, like about psychedelics now, like how to actually treat mental health issues, the things that are available legally in pharmacies with a ton of side effects that are so difficult and addictive. And then psychedelics are illegal when they're, oh my gosh, hundreds of times more healing, not addictive. But then they don't make profit because if someone heals, they don't buy the drugs anymore.
No.
Well, if they go to the pharmacy, they need to be hooked up. So it, but then, yeah, it's the same with like so many things. I think there's a quote on Instagram that's going around sometimes that so many of the things that are so meaningful in life are free, like the moon and like women's circles and love and sex and hugs. You know, it's like, what are we distracting ourselves with?
Totally.
And this is a conversation I'm so obsessed with, of like, we are distracted from the things that are actually where healing is and presence is and life's magic is. When we pay attention to those, life shifts completely.
Totally.
But we are distracted, and attention is such an important resource.
It's so interesting you say that, because I was thinking the other day about how like I came in through, I was in banking, so I was like doing the thing of like, I'll make loads of money. That's the thing that will make me happy. And then having this day where I got this really big bonus payment and I was like crying on the floor in a yoga studio, miserable. And I was like, this cannot be right. Like, this was meant to be the thing and now I'm miserable. And then I went on this whole journey of evolution and spiritual work and doing this stuff. And like, I thought I had transcended the like idea that things outside of me could make me happy. And I was single, and I was single for that whole period. And then I met my partner and I thought that I had got over the idea that a relationship would be a thing that made me happy. And we went through the whole like liminal phase of honeymoon and all that stuff. And then, to be honest, our relationship, that ended pretty quickly because I have a lot of relational stuff that I'm forever working through. So when we came out of that honeymoon phase, I was like, I had to go through this whole grieving process of like, oh, again, I've got sucked into the illusion that this person's going to make me happy. Now that I have a partner, I'll be happy. I was like, no, it's still me. It's still me. It's constantly me. And like, that's not to say that we don't need community and we don't need people around us and we don't need like things that are external, but it's the illusion of constantly chasing something outside of us that is going to make us happy, and like the suffering that comes with that. And that we live in a system that continually feeds us that narrative. That's like, once you have this, once you have that, once you do this, once you get here. And it's like, that's not the point.
Yeah. Really draining. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I see, like, thing with the inner work that we do, like, we get in the habit of just putting up a mirror with everything. Like, these days, if my partner is complaining about something, I'm like, what could have I enabled for him to be suffering? Like, am I the one? Because we are living together. Like, 5 years ago, I would have just blamed him and sent him to therapy and tell him to do all this work. And I still make those recommendations when appropriate. But much more than in the past, I'm also looking within, or I bring it to my therapy session. And it's like, yeah, what am I not seeing here? Because I know there's so many perspectives. And this is what, like, all this work, either through meditation or psychedelics or a ton of personal development that I've done, is that helping me realize that there's actually so many ways to look at something. Mm. And very often I may just be wrong. Mm. Like, we were watching a musical the other day. We went to the concert hall when we saw Cats, the Broadway show. Fucking phenomenal. Would watch it again, again, again. And we were like on the second row. And we were like, oh my gosh, we got the best seats because we can even see the facial expressions of the performers. But then we thought, well, actually, if we were back there, or if we were like up over there, we would have seen like the entirety of the performance. So like, it would not be like less than, it would just be a different perspective, and it would have been kind of like a different show. So it's like, it doesn't matter, like, there's no right or wrong. It's like, oh, there's so many different perspectives. And I was like, you know, this is the same in life, like, and this is what this work is so good, because you get to see that, oh, I was like zooming in on my little problem, but actually if I zoom out, there's a lot more going on here. Because we're so trapped in our mind. We believe our thoughts, but many of the thoughts are liars. And we don't necessarily believe them, but we don't know until we are called to explore either through meditation or something else.
Yeah, I like the tricks that our minds can play on us. Like, I've had this year's been really interesting for me coming back to London, because I suddenly was like confronted with how expensive the city is, and being a small business owner, making a lot less money than I used to, my partner's looking for work. Like, I went into this whole spiral of like really, really freaking out about money. And my mind was telling me all of these stories, all this stuff. And it's like, if I hadn't done this work, I wouldn't have realized that this was not about money. This was about like some deep, deep part of me that does not feel safe in the world. And it's actually an invitation into deeper nervous system work and deeper work with that part of me that like fundamentally doesn't feel safe regardless of how much money I have. Because like, the truth is, I have a lot of savings from my previous career and I'm fine. But it's like the stories that we can tell ourselves, and without the awareness of the deeper aspects of the psyche, we can get so caught in that surface level stuff. And I know that so much of your work is around psychedelics, and I really want us to dive into that piece, because I think it's such an interesting space. And you said in your intake form, which I love, that you can barely actualize without psychedelics. Just like, first of all, for those of us who don't know what you mean when you say self-actualize, what does that mean? In like three sentences.
Okay. Thank you for that. Helps to have boundaries. So just to meet ourselves and bring forth what is within us. There is a quote in Authentic Happiness by Martin Seligman that says, the purpose of life is to figure out who you are and to find as many outlets to express that as possible. So
I love that so much.
So a quote by someone else is more helpful than I can also bring an Einstein one, but it's like to find out who it is that we are. Like, so many things that we have been drawn to, called to, maybe even in when we were kids and we had certain hobbies, we didn't have different hobbies, like we shared, like both of us were curious about the nature of the world and like that, like, behavior, motivation. Like, personally, I was also a dancer. I was not a painter. Like, so if we actually follow the breadcrumbs of the things that we naturally want to do that are really calling us. And I know it's hard when society is like, get a job and go to school and then marry someone, and, like, make money and then buy a lot of stuff on Black Friday and Christmas. You know, if we don't actually, like, listen to all those voices, but we follow our own inner calling, I think we get closer and closer to finding who it is that we really are. And then I think naturally we reach a place in our healing, in our individual evolution, that we want to then contribute to something bigger than ourselves. Like, it goes from me, I want to understand myself and heal myself and unblock myself, to then, oh my gosh, this is great, I want to share that with someone else. Like, when you love a movie and then tell all your friends about it because you want them to watch the movie too. So I think that's what it is, like, finding who we really are, who we want to be, and then expressing that and helping others through that.
Like Martin Seligman wrote something along the lines of, I'm paraphrasing, the purpose of life is to know who you are and to find as many outlets as you can to express that as possible. And I think when we follow those breadcrumbs that of the things that we love, the things that are, when we do them, we lose track of time, that have always been there, maybe since childhood. And it might seem like a guilty pleasure. I used to feel guilty that I'm spending so much time on my hobbies, on meditating, doing yoga. Like, it felt like, oh, I'm not being a productive citizen. But those, I call them breadcrumbs. A client of mine calls them matchsticks. Like, following those little, where there's a spark, tend to lead us into really special places. And often our healing, I've noticed both in myself and also others, that it moves from an individual to a collective focus. So it feels as if we start with me, I want to heal myself, I want to understand myself, I want to figure out who the fuck I am, what the fuck is wrong with me. Like, I want things to get better. And when we do that, then it naturally unfolds into, actually, now I want to share that with other people. I want to help someone else. I figured something out and I want more people to know that. So yeah, it moves from this, like, individual to this collective actualization. But I think it really starts with following our passions and getting better at the things that we're already either strong at or talented in or just naturally drawn into. Tim Ferriss actually...
And why?
I'll say one last thing. Tim Ferriss mentioned at some point that it's much better to improve on something that you're good at, rather than try to get better and better and better at something that you don't really care about. You know, you're kind of average in it, because at best you're gonna end up good average. But if you really go for something that you're super passionate about, like, maybe you're kind of good at it, you just haven't really trained the muscle, then you will be a master at the craft. You will be more of an expert in it. And that's the work that's also life-giving and not draining, because you're really interested in it.
Yeah. And you think, like, what would happen to the world if everyone was doing what it was they were here to actually do? And why, if we go back to the initial question before we had the internet meltdown, why do you feel like psychedelics are so important in that journey?
Right. So... where do we begin in the magical world of psychedelics?
Well, I guess my first question is, when I first started working with psychedelics, I kind of came at them, I had, like, done enough work to be like, okay, this is a medicine, I'm using it as a medicine, I'm using it intentionally. But a lot of the people that I was friends with from my previous life in many ways were like, you're going and doing shrooms in a park. Like,
saw
it definitely through the lens of, like, party, drug, right, like, getting high. I guess the first question is, like, what are we actually talking about here? Because I think a lot of people see psychedelics through a lens that we're not talking about right now.
Through Nixon's propaganda, psychedelics fry your brain like an egg on a frying pan lens. Yeah. So the Psychedelics, like many tools in life, can be used for, like, can be used constructively or destructively. And this is why things like dosage, like set and setting, that quality of the substance, not mixing things, not doing it around people you don't trust, around unpredictable environments, things like that, that people like me that are trained in it are constantly talking about. But really, what I've experienced, like in my personal journey, because clubbing was never my thing. It felt like a complete, it just felt like a really silly idea to stand and bounce instead of properly dance, but stand and bounce with a drink in a really loud environment, and you can't even have a conversation with your friends. I would much rather be in a pub than in a club. So I didn't use them in that way, especially in the beginning. Later, even clubbing can like, we can take it to the next level. But even then, I used to think of, especially when I started, when my relationship with LSD started, which is probably my favorite thing in the world. It just, me and LSD are just, it was just a love at first sight thing. I used to say if I could marry LSD, I would, but I couldn't, so I married my husband. It just like we vibe together. I cannot explain it. There's the LSD people and the rest of psychedelics people. But basically, like as soon as we didn't know, like the problem with psychedelics is because they are largely legal in most countries of the world and they're underground, you probably need to kiss someone's ass to get them. Unlike meditation, that's within you and accessible at all times, anywhere. But with psychedelics, actually, when I first found out about them, no one in my friends group was interested. They were like, no, that sounds bad or dodgy or whatever. And I was like, no. I was actually reading this blog called High Existence that was talking about psychedelics a lot and about like higher consciousness. And I was like, but clearly, like, this is the tool for that, for like deeper self awareness. And when we started using LSD with some friends, after university, I felt as if we are almost like investing brain cells here. This could potentially be toxic and harmful, so let's make this experience count. So I used to always, without even knowing about set and setting, I used to say to my friends, okay, what are we here to resolve today? What are we gonna do with this? Like before I knew about intention setting and what an intention even was, I was like, we are potentially gonna harm our brain, but maybe we won't. So like, what exactly is the focus? And we would end up having really deep conversations. It felt like they were really healing. And if they weren't, we were just having so much fun. We were funny. We were, especially on LSD, sometimes it feels like you're going to the botanical garden and then this person shows up and they say something silly and then you're like, did this really happen, or was it the acid? But it's like the whole life becomes like a movie, and it feels like, oh, this is why I'm alive, to experience life on psychedelics. Like that was my experience of like, now that my inhibitions are down, now that I'm super present, now that I'm seeing things in a way for what they really are. Like someone might say something and I really hear it and I understand it 10 layers deeper. Like if someone tells me, for example, that they miss home, I feel it. I'm not just in my head distracted by my thoughts, but I'm like, that must be so hard. And I can feel your pain. So, like, the level of the conversations is so much deeper when we are in the psychedelic space. Then our senses are heightened, colors are brighter. And even like the sound is louder and more like crystal clear. The details are incredible. So, the fact that you're being in life, just immersed in this show of color and light and shadows and smells and sensations, and you're so present with all your senses activated, heightened at the same time, it kind of made me feel like this is the point of being alive, to be present with all my senses aware all at once instead of thinking, again, distracted. And sometimes I say to my clients as well, especially with microdosing, even if You only, the only experience you have is that you microdose or you take a higher dose. It's more likely if you take the higher the dose, the more intense the experience is. But even with a microdose, you may have a moment that you look up at the sky and you realize that this day and this moment is beautiful and be grateful for life and the sky. And even for that moment alone, psychedelics are worth it. Because that's kind of the point. Like for me, each moment that we're present and enjoying being present, each moment that we're here, it's worth it. It's kind of like scoring in life of like, yep, I'm alive in this moment, and then in the next one, and then in the next one. And of course, the mind thinks, and that's why we train it through meditation and psychedelics and different things. But it's like the more we are here enjoying it and enjoying ourselves being here, I feel like that's kind of the point. So that's why I feel like psychedelics have taught me how to do life, and life, the more it's lifing, it's teaching me how to show up in psychedelics, which it just so many directions that we can take it. Psychedelics are also incredible for healing mental health issues, healing trauma, healing blockages, but those experiences need a certain structure. They need a facilitator that's trained, ideally in somatics, trauma informed. They also need us to be more self-aware, because someone might have, they may call it a bad trip of like, oh my gosh, all this pain came up and I freaked out. Well, pain is part of healing and part of life. But if someone knows how to do this work, if someone has done therapy, if someone has done like even like different experiences in life that have prepared them, then their psychedelic journeys will be very different than someone who's just going to a club and drinking alcohol and then taking some MDMA and then, like with people they don't trust. Because psychedelics are always, they have consciousness. It's like, if I am trusting the environment and I can surrender to it, oh my gosh, my experience is gonna be 100 layers deeper than if I am with strangers and I'm super guarded. Not much is gonna happen, because we're
I'm
actually
wondering.
humans. Oh no, you're freezing again.
I
Okay,
can
you're
hear
back.
you.
Yes.
The internet does not like us talking about psychedelics.
What is going on? It was meditation was the same.
I'm intrigued because my first experience of like a higher dose of psychedelics was with mushrooms, and I remember having this moment on that journey that was facilitated of like, okay, I'm seeing the whole world, to your point, like I'm seeing colors, I'm seeing shapes, I'm like, so my senses are so heightened. I remember thinking like, this is actually what life looks like. This isn't, and like the idea that like, oh, you're hallucinating or you're seeing like weird things, it's like I had a sense that I was like, no, this is actually what life is. And I'm just not normally attuned to it enough to be able to see that. But I'm wondering, like, because I think a lot of people that have fear around psychedelics have this sense that it's potentially an escape. And it's like, okay, I'm just going to take psychedelics to escape, to get high, and to maybe have like a peak experience, but it's not really doing anything. And I wonder, like, from your perspective, what is the difference between a peak experience and actually using psychedelics intentionally and integrating them back into your life?
Well, that's a whole other podcast episode, but we can get to it. Because integration is my favorite piece. But so on one hand, like it feels as if the more I work with psychedelics, especially with myself, the more I mature spiritually, emotionally, the more I get to understand who I am and hold space for myself and be the observer in my life and in psychedelics. And when I'm crying through the depths of my soul because of whatever pain, which I couldn't do in the past. But the more I do this work, the less I feel like I know. Like the less I can speak like on the behalf of psychedelics. But from my experience, like something that I've personally pondered on is like, are some people For example, like it has happened to me multiple times to be in a festival where the pure intention is to dance to music and have fun and party. And because I am addicted to getting to know myself and more parts of me, and there's nothing more interested in me, there's nothing more interesting for me than getting to know my own psyche, that even in that setting, I will start thinking about my mommy issues and going to a very different journey while others just want to fucking dance. And that this has brought me to like arguments with friends and my partner of like, can you just have fun? And I'm like, no, I don't want, like, it sounds like, no, I want to go so much deeper. This is how I party. Like, you don't understand. So, like, I feel like for some people, because psychedelic, literally the word, it comes from Greek. Psychedelic, it means manifesting the psyche. So if someone is, so it might depend on level of consciousness, level of awareness. Like if something, and like they give us, they bring up what's in the subconscious. If in my subconscious is like, I generally am dying to understand where my perfectionism comes from and to go from a life that's kind of black and white to a life that's full of color. And I feel like if I understand these things and go deeper on the root and I understand my mother better, and that's gonna help me. Like that is possibly in my subconscious. For someone else, it might be like, I just want to meet a man and I want to flirt and I want to be cute. And I don't even know what's in it. But so I think a big part is what is in people's subconscious. And some people might be drawn to take psychedelics seriously and others just to party. Now, the experience that you've said, there's a few different things I want to bring into this conversation. Of many people's concern is that psychedelics will make them crazy. And they will start hallucinating and have like visions that are not true. And my experience as well, as many, like you said, like yours and many other people that I know, is that our experience on psychedelics is more real than real. As if us right now having this conversation, not on psychedelics, are not fully sober because we might be kind of distracted. And we might be kind of scattered. This is not our natural state. This is a fucking altered state of consciousness. But when you are in the psychedelic space, that is the true, the natural state of consciousness. That is an expanded state of consciousness, which we are capable of. So why would we live life without that experience when it's possible to have it? That's why I believe that self-actualization is amplified, augmented by psychedelics.
So in that respect, what I'm understanding you say is that psychedelics are actually an access point to deep presence, and that in deep presence we have access to like our true state of expanded consciousness and what life really feels like from that state of presence.
Yeah, and also it feels as if so many blocks are disabled because beliefs and like on in the brain, yes, the parts of the brain like where the default mode network is, the part of the brain that constantly talks to us, the where the all the self-talk, the inner critic, or the things that we have to do. Oh, it's trash day today, or like I didn't pay that bill, or like am I a good enough wife to my husband? It like all of that narrative is actually silenced when we take psychedelics. So then we can see life, experience life without that constant like chatter. And I feel like that is what life really is, which is why it's really good for healing. Like many people, like Steve Jobs, got incredible ideas on psychedelics because different parts of the brain actually get to communicate that normally they don't communicate. They're like separated. And that's why sometimes on psychedelics, we also have more ideas, like more creative solution making processes. Like I found, like even on microdosing one day, I found a faster way to pre-cook cauliflower and save time every morning. And I was like, how did I not see that before? Like I've been doing the same process every morning. And suddenly I'm like, I could save like 10 to 15 minutes doing this every day. But it's because I was microdosing that I saw it. So I think like I had almost like a vision, more like an experience. On one of my first experiences on MDMA, it was probably the second experience, that it felt as if normal us without psychedelics, let's call it normal, we are behind a door that's mainly closed but slightly open. And that's how we look at life. And when we take psychedelics, that door of perception opens and we get to see all that is always there. And often we don't have dilemmas. It's like, oh, I know what I want to do. There is no, I should do this, or my mom told me to do that. It's like this is clearly my path. Like often this happens because the veil, the illusion, all the beliefs, all the narrative, the condition is lifted. Now, some people might get more confused because of their trauma, because of where they come from. And that's why psychedelic preparation is really important, because ultimately we cannot prescribe what's going to happen. What is in the psyche is emerging. It's coming up. So if someone is grieving, very likely pain is going to come up. If someone hasn't done any work, we don't know what's going to come up because they honestly have never opened the Pandora's box. Some people, and I know personally, people that are really trauma, like they've actually had big T trauma that they deny to accept that that was a traumatic experience. They're like, no, that's okay. And they keep going from psychedelic journey to psychedelic journey and doing all the things, the float tanks, the peptide, like trying a bunch of different ways to heal themselves. And they will go to ayahuasca or they will go to psilocybin ceremonies and nothing happens for them. Nothing. Because maybe the medicine is basically saying, this is going to be too much and you're not ready to hold it because you have no idea how to hold yourself. You actually think you are your thoughts and you're constantly on social media, like scrolling. So I'm going to give you nothing. Well, someone else on ayahuasca may have a vision realizing that their parents tried to abort them and they lived. Same medicine, same setting, people will have completely different experiences because of what's in the psyche, which is why
That's,
psychedelic preparation exists these days.
yeah, it makes me think. I had a client who she went to go and work with, like, it wasn't MDMA, but it was kind of similar to MDMA, and we'd done quite a lot of work beforehand, and I spoke to her afterwards and I was like, how was your journey? She was like, honestly, if we hadn't done the work before, it would have been a complete different experience, like just because of understanding like what it is inside Pandora's box that you're actually opening up into. And I do sometimes think that there are people, because psychedelics have become much more mainstream and people sometimes think of it as a like magic bullet, like, oh, I'll just go and do mushrooms or I'll go and do ayahuasca in the jungle and then it'll be good. It's like, no, you still need some form of understanding of your psyche. Like, we can't bypass that. And I also think it leads quite naturally onto the piece about integration, because I know so many people, myself included, who have had really peak experiences on psychedelics and had these moments of like oneness or like deep insight into something or inspiration or like a knowing that they need to do something. And they come out, it's the same with retreats, you know, like you go to a
Of
retreat and you're
course.
like, you have this like huge peak experience. And then you think like, oh, I'm like good now, I've done this thing. It's like, no, the work begins. You come home, like how do you reintegrate? And I know that's such a big piece of your work of like how you actually stop chasing peak experiences, because I think that the personal development world has kind of become addicted to the peak experience and thinks like the more catharsis, the more like deep work, the more psychedelic trips, whatever, the better. And it's like, look, can we actually just, there's this meme I always see on Instagram that's like, please just integrate me. Like, you don't need another trip. Like, if you fully integrated one insight, how your life would change. And how do you go about, like, and I know that this is probably a longer conversation than we have time for right now, but like, what is the process of integration after like a peak experience like that?
And it reminds me of that Jim Rohn quote, which is something like, personal development is like taking a shower. It's recommended daily. It's not like, oh, I did it once and now I'm good. You wouldn't go to the gym and go once and say, oh, that should do it. Let me just wait and see how my booty starts forming. If I just wait, it's like, no, you literally train the muscle. You go once a week, not enough. Every time you go back, it hurts. It's as if you never went. You go twice a week, okay, we're doing something. You go three times a week, okay, we're really like muscles are starting to form. And personal development, nervous system work is similar. It's like you train You untrain your thoughts from what they were and retrain them into the new way of thinking and being and believing. And something that I recommend that is really important because so many people, it's the elephant in the room in the psychedelic industry. Like, so many retreats and facilitators will say integration is the most important part, but they don't do much about it. There's going to be a psychedelic circle the day after the ceremony or 2 days after. There might be an integration call like a week after, and there's going to be like some WhatsApp group chat or like a Signal chat. But really, integration is a long-term process. It's the opposite of the quick fix. And it's this slow, steady, grounded work. It's similar to going to the gym. And what I really recommend is to start immediately after. There's after psychedelic experiences, there's like afterglow. There's the critical learning period that we call it in our brains, where it re really feels like, okay, I've got it now and I'm healed now. It feels as if things that would normally be triggering are not actually triggering, as if we have way more presence, access to presence, access to clarity, access to inspiration, there's momentum. And many people, and I used to be one of those people for many years, like my life was curated around peak experiences, from retreats to meditation things to yoga training. Like, it was always, I was like, I just want to go plug back in, but then I would come out and then it would fade, which is what made me so passionate about the next stage, which is the integration. So it's like we need to keep revisiting the felt experience. And as we learn in CI as well, in compassion inquiry, it's not similar to like therapy. It's not just in the head, it's actually in the body. And what I love, like I often combine the work of many of my teachers and many mentors, many things that have really helped me personally. And I'm like, what if we can combine them all in one approach, which is what in my world is integration. So Joe Dispenza will also teach that who you are is how you think, how you feel, and how you act. How you think, how you feel, and how you act. It's if I go into a ceremony, say I have a really beautiful experience, I feel like I came home. People will say things like that, like, I feel like I've come home. The universe was me, and I was the universe. There was no separation between others and me. Their laughter was my laughter. How do you integrate that? Well, it's not just journal about it. It's also feel it in your body. It's like revisiting that experience, revisiting the felt experience in your body, similar to how you would go to the gym. So that the more you experience it in the now, the more you're in it again. There's no separation between the experience that happened and the one you're having right now. Things that work is maybe listening to medicine music that was playing during the ceremony, connecting with people, and ideally, like in an ideal world, I would love people that go into group ceremonies to have 3 months of preparation with that group they're going to journey with, so that A, they really know each other, B, they feel this is in an ideal world scenario where people don't just sign up for a weekend with ayahuasca or mushrooms and then they've never seen those people before and never see them again, because often those people cannot fully surrender to the experience, so they're kind of guarded because their system doesn't trust the environment because it's full of strangers. And I've been to places, I am assisting in a psychedelic coach training, and our participants, like our students there, they know, I mean, they are becoming psychedelic coaches as well, so they're very serious about the work that they're doing. But they've been seeing each other on Zoom calls for like 3 months. Then they have an in-person experience. They feel like a part of something. They feel like these are my brothers and sisters. They feel like I am being held when it's hard, and I'm holding everyone as well. So their journey is much deeper just because they really trust and surrender both the facilitators that they also know and the environment and the people that they're doing it with. And now that is transferred in integration too. Like going back to Zoom, I recommend twice a week, at least for the first 2 to 4 months, similar to the gym, because it's a new, you just planted a new seed. You want to water, you want to caretake. And then after, it may be easier to sustain it, but research says it takes 2 to 8 months to form habits. So it's not just I did it for 3 months. We don't know, but really, if you are going back on Zoom calls with that same group, you've all shared the same experience. I mean, different experiences, but the same on the same day, same context, and you're holding and being held. Integration works best as part of the group. And revisiting that felt experience. And also going deeper, because psychedelics will not do the work for you. They'll show you where the work is. And that is not often advertised recently, that psychedelics are going mainstream. They say that, oh, it's this magic pill solution, but really the people that do best are the people that have been training their self-awareness for years. I tend to say the best psychedelic preparation is self-awareness. Like, and every year that you do your breath work, your therapy, your relational work, and every year you have sessions, psychedelic sessions, they will go deeper and deeper and deeper. So many of the people that I've helped prepare and integrate, those who were therapists would have much more meaningful journeys than people that were not. But also, you know, they don't have to be therapists, but this is it. And I also want to come back to something that I forgot to answer in the previous question, the importance of an intention. Now, if someone looks at psychedelic, because you can really guide the experience with your intention alone. And I can tell you a story. We have time for a story about that. I can help to nail in the teaching.
I'm definitely, I'm just, I, when you talked about intention, I was just thinking about the terrible intention that I set when I went to go and do iboga. And I was like, I went into the ceremony and I was like, I know that I need to have an intention. And for everyone listening, like, I had worked with psychedelics before. I wasn't going into it totally blind, but I was like, in my phase of like, I just want to heal the stuff. And I was like, I want to heal the trauma of my mum losing her dad when she was pregnant with me. And I spent 48 hours in terror. And I was like, I probably shouldn't have set that intention. But in many ways, I'm now hugely grateful because it sent me to your point around psychedelics showing you where your work is. Like, it really sent me on pretty much like a 2-year journey of meeting this fear that I had no idea was inside of me. So, yeah, I would love to know your story about intention setting and its importance.
Yeah. And as a yoga teacher, I was someone that had heard and probably used the word a lot, set an intention for your practice today. And I didn't know what that word meant, Lucy. I did not. I was just using it as if it's, you know, my friends drink coffee, so I drink coffee kind of thing. So I went into ayahuasca to get over my ex. I was just crying nonstop, day and night. Everyone that would meet me, I was like the depressed girl. And I was like, this is so not who I am. I'm so out of my sense. Like, this is just not who I am. And I was like, okay, it's time for this particular medicine. It's time to talk to myself and it's time to talk to the medicine, to grandmother ayahuasca. And my intention for psychedelics, it's almost always the same, unless I have some specific topic, some issue that I'm navigating or want clarity on. My intention 9 out of 10 times is remember who you are. Because I forget, life happens, and then I get knocked off and I completely lose my direction and who I am. And the fact that it feels good to be me, I start getting, and like, you know, so I go back to recenter, kind of regroup, shake off a little bit. And I went into ayahuasca, and the first night it was just so dark, and I would see no intention. I just wanted to like not be depressed, I guess, and come back to my center, really. But what actually ended up happening was that I was stuck in loops that I could see why we broke up and why it was not working out at the moment, and also seeing what a perfect couple we would be. So it was as if I was going from problem to solution to back to problem, A to B to C to A. And I was stuck in that loop. And other things were also happening. The whole world was dissolving in itself, and everything I knew stopped to exist, which is why, like, on one hand, please prepare for psychedelics. On another hand, nothing can prepare you for psychedelics. So somewhere along those lines. But I felt it was a terrifying experience, and I connected with a lot of my darkness. It felt like a really dark, really scary journey, and like to be stuck in loops, to not understand anything. It was pretty crazy. So then I went to the Taitas, which is basically shamans in Colombia, for those who don't know. And I asked, like, I was like, I trust you and I trust the medicine, but I'm scared to drink again because I don't want this to happen again. It was really dark and really, yeah, pretty scary. And they told me, well, just change your intentions. And I said to myself, Alex, you better figure out what intention means within the next 5 hours because we want to avoid this experience. So I said to myself, okay, I know that there's darkness in me. I know, like, we all have shadow and light. Right now, I also want to find my light. I want to find my strength. I want to find my light. This is it. And I went in with that intention. And, you know, ayahuasca is really tough to drink because it's really bitter and it doesn't taste nice at all. And then it creates like a little stomach ache and nausea. I mean, yeah, there is a lot of purging. But before that, basically, what we would do, we would drink the first cup and then go back to our yoga mat, sitting in a maloka, many people around in a circle. And I went back to my yoga mat and I sat like in fetal position, basically, because it was really uncomfortable in my stomach and I was just waiting for it to kick in. And as soon as it did, I sat up like cross-legged, and the first thing that came to me was, remember that you love yourself and your love is your power. And from there, it took off. And it basically became this really bright journey that it was going from more and more light to more and more strength, to understanding where we come from, to understanding, yes, how many people walk this earth, why hippies always called the trees our ancestors, why it makes more sense to walk barefoot so that I'm connected to everything. It felt like, you know, when I purged, it felt like the vomit that came out of me was me. And it's going in the earth, which is soil, which is me. I came out of the earth. And when I die, I will descend back to the earth. So we are all recyclable. We're all the same material. Me and the earth and my purse are all one. So I was having all these insane insights that forever changed me. You cannot unsee. And that went back to the intention. And now I feel like often for people that just go clubbing, their intention purely is, I just want to dance and have fun, or I want to escape because my life is really horrible. And that's what the psychedelics will give them. Well, for me, even if my friends want to go clubbing, deep down, I don't just want to dance. I want to meet more parts of myself, which is why I end up having these huge journeys. So, intention is like, I've also had the experience of having a mushroom chocolate that I thought was a microdose, and it was not a microdose. And my intention
Haven't
was,
we all done that before?
oh my God, there's so many memes about that. That was not a microdose. So my intention was to journal and do some yoga, and then I laid down and I'm like, I cannot journal and I can definitely not do yoga. But then I had dinner planned. So I went to my dinner plans with my friends and I was talking, and they were like, did you really have that mushroom chocolate? Because this mushroom chocolate had this much of mushrooms. I was like, yeah, I just found out because I'm really high right now. But because I can navigate the experience, I can also be with friends while being high. But really, my intention that day was to have a microdose. It was not a microdose, but it was not a full-blown journey because I still went out to dinner with friends. And then I had another one of the same chocolate. And then a few months later, I had a friend facilitate for me. I said my intentions. I cleaned the house, cooked for me, bought myself flowers. Like, I did everything as if I'm having a full-blown journey. And I swear to God, the same chocolate felt as if it was like 3 grams more, because my intention on that day was to have an actual journey. So intention really changes the experience. And to come back to integration, yes, it's really important to be held after the experience. I teach these things. This is my favorite thing to coach people on, and I cannot integrate just by myself personally. There's 50% of me doing my practices and my meditation and being the experience and making sense of it and translating it into something meaningful for the future, because direction and vision is really important. But I also need my therapist and my friends who do psychedelic work and get psychedelic work, because I can't talk about these things to friends who are not into psychedelics. So the community element and having a coach or a therapist that is psychedelic informed and can hold you is just so important, because that is how we self-actualize. When we have those peak experiences and we open Pandora's box and we open up and we are, all these insights come. If we don't stop at the insight and actually embody it, actually put it to work, like you said, after Iboga, you had 2 years of work. When we actually take that material and do something with it, I feel like we stop being in this vicious cycle of like, oh, peak experience to not knowing what to do with it, to back to normal life, to then another peak experience to have that again. Instead of being in a vicious cycle, we start walking up a ladder of like, I had a peak experience, I know how to integrate it. Next peak experience will take me deeper and higher and like really deeper in myself. It can always get deeper. And then I know how to integrate. I have my coach, I have my community, I know how to do my work around vision, my somatic work. I'm integrated in my peak experience. And then I have another one, it takes me to the next level. So we're literally becoming more and more of ourselves, and hopefully also contributing to something that's aligned and helps other people. I think that is how we collectively actualize as well.
And if you were talking to someone who has never done any of this work before, and I know we need to start wrapping up, but this is my second to last question. Someone that has never done psychedelics but is kind of intrigued, because I know a lot of people are like, I'm a bit scared, I'm intrigued. Like, where do people start? Like, what is a good, because as you mentioned, like, there's a lot of preparation work that needs to happen before you go into a bigger journey. What can people do to like dip their toes into the water of this kind of work?
Well, psychedelics always start with a calling. So if someone is generally called, like ideally, yes, the best preparation would be having a meditation practice, understanding you are not necessarily your thoughts all the time. You're actually that presence, that observer, the self with capital S, as we would say in parts work, maybe therapy, maybe coaching, but whatever healing modality. Then if someone is called, microdosing is the safest, most like easily to predict way, easy to predict way to actually get into that realm without getting overwhelmed. So you are building a relationship with the medicine. So it's like, if I'm really called to mushrooms, many people are really called to mushrooms. As an LSD girl, I'm like, have you really tried LSD though? But anyway, I want to write a book about LSD one day. So if people say are called to mushrooms, it's like, okay, well, let's start cultivating a relationship with that. You can start low and go slow, because you can always take more. If within an hour or an hour and a half, say 2 hours tops, you don't feel anything. I mean, supposed to be sub-perceptual, but most people's optimal dose, like most people's sweet spot, is to have this little boost, as if I'm feeling really good, I'm writing better emails, I can, like, things that are triggering, I can just laugh about them, it's not a big deal. I can look up at the sky and feel really grateful, and today is a good day. Or my anxiety is actually a bit quieter today. This is that, okay, the microdose is working. It's not like insane, nothing is moving. As James Fadiman, who's the godfather of microdosing, he says, with microdosing, the flowers may look brighter, but they're not gonna turn around and say hello. Which, if you take a
No, I
larger,
like
they might.
yeah. And I mean I like often microdose with work, and I think a lot of people, when I've spoken to clients about the potential of microdosing, there's this sense of like, oh God, but like what happens if I'm like I go to work and I'm suddenly really high? And it's like, initially maybe try on a weekend to see how you respond. But it's like
Absolutely.
I work significantly better on microdose.
Of course, same. Like, I almost exclusively microdose for productivity and focus and writing my landing pages in 1 hour instead of 4 days. And
And don't you have an amazing, I saw somewhere that you have an amazing guide to microdosing.
yes, I do. Thank you for bringing that up. I often forget. It's
I
a
saw, no,
microphone.
because I saw it and I was genuinely like, I kind of want to buy this.
That is so pretty. I designed it myself. It's one of my babies. So it's I did that so that clients that it started with a client. I was like, if she's kind of tuned out like for half of this session and she's missing all the safety guidelines that I'm giving her, she's just gonna be asking me the same questions over and over again or end up like ChatGPTing things. But like, I'm a certified coach. I don't know if people on Reddit or like ChatGPT's results are literally as reliable. So I created this to be almost like a complete course. It doesn't talk really about the history of microdosing. It's just like a complete like A to B to C. This is how to store things. This is how to set intentions, a ton of intention, like a intention setting journal prompts, a ton of tracking sheets, because if you are microdosing on a coffee, on lower hours of sleep, like it might affect you differently. So it's good to build awareness, to build your routine around it. So yes, it's a microdosing guide and workbook. It's like 137 pages. And most people that bought it have said that it's actually so visually appealing that it's just a nice experience to have it because of all the cute graphics and the little stars and stuff that I added in it. So
No, I mean, when
that's
I
that.
had a, I had a super quick look at it and I was like, this is what 100% I needed when I first started microdosing, because I went into it totally blind and was just like, I'll just take some microdoses and see how I am. And going back to the point of intention, it's like, if you're going to be working with it intentionally, it's so important to have some kind of support system around it. If we come towards the end of this beautiful conversation, where can people find out more about you and what you do?
So Instagram, the Alex Experience, at the Alex Experience, and LinkedIn, Alexandra-Arzoglu. You will leave the link because I don't expect anyone to know how to spell my last name or to pronounce it. And then my website is thealexexperience.com. These are the main platforms I use. Sometimes I dip my toes in TikTok and YouTube. So depending on when people are gonna see this, I might have evolved those platforms or maybe not, because currently I have a very love and hate relationship.